It was a beautiful sunny morning in the Northeast this morning, just like it was 12 years ago on September 11th, 2001. President Obama spoke today at the Pentagon, where more than 180 people died when terrorists flew a plane into the building.
It is an honor to be with you here again to remember the tragedy of 12 Septembers ago, to honor the greatness of all who responded, and to stand with those who still grieve.
In Shanksville, Pennsylvania, bells were rung for the 40 people who died when United 93 crashed into a farm field. And in New York City, the names of nearly 3,000 people who died when two planes hit the World Trade Center were read.
Kenneth William Besnicki.
Stephen Joseph Bates.
And my grandfather that we miss and love, Eustace R. Backus.
And my sister.
The Twin Towers collapsed after the planes hit them, but today a new skyscraper stands near where they did. It rises 1,776 feet into the sky. Getting it built was not easy, and the 12-year battle for what to do with Ground Zero is the subject of a new book. It's a story of tension between commemoration and commerce, and it's called Battle for Ground Zero, Inside the Political Struggle to Rebuild the World Trade Center. Author Elizabeth Greenspan joins us from NPR in New York to talk about it. Elizabeth, welcome to Here and Now.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, first, for people who have not been to the site recently, we should say there are a few new buildings up, the biggest being, of course, One World Trade Center, which is almost finished. We've got some photos at hereandnow.org. Tell us what the site looks like today.
Half of the site is a memorial plaza. There are reflecting pools that stand over the original footprints of the Twin Towers. There are waterfalls that descend into these pools. And then surrounding the waterfalls are the victims' names, the nearly 3,000 victims. And that's half the site. Yeah.
And the buildings that are up. Tell us about those.
Yeah, surrounding the memorial plaza on nearly all sides are the towers that they're constructing, four of them, and they're in different stages of construction, so there'll probably be construction for another 4 or 5 years at least.
Now, from the beginning, there was a real debate about what Ground Zero should be after the attacks, and one of the key players was a guy named Larry Silverstein, a businessman who had acquired the lease to the World Trade Center just a month and a half before the attack. Tell us about him.
Larry Silverstein is a New York City developer. He had built World Trade Center 7 in the 1980s, and ever since then, he had wanted to own or lease the Twin Towers. And finally, 6 weeks before 9/11, he managed to secure that deal and sign the lease. And then all of this office space, 10 million square feet of it, was destroyed in the 9/11 attacks, and he's been working ever since then to rebuild all of it.
And he had some say, another entity with some say in what happened was the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, which owns the land. But as you write, based on what happened there, everybody, of course, every American and certainly every victim and victim's family felt that they owned a piece of it. How would you describe the fight over the last 12 years?
I really see the battle as one for ownership. It's this question of who does this land belong to, and also how will we make those decisions? How will we decide who gets to claim this piece of land? And so for 10 years now, people have been battling over what it means, what it should become, and who gets to determine that.
It was also, of course, a question of consumerism versus reflection. This is, of course, right at the center of the financial capital of the world.
Yes, this is one of the most valuable pieces of land in the world. It held the largest office complex in the country. So, of course, there was an imperative, many people thought, to rebuild all of this office space to make sure that the status of Lower Manhattan as a financial hub remained after the attacks. But then you had all these other people who felt, you know, that this was a now historic piece of land where so many thousands of people were killed. So it brought these questions of commerce and remembering into sharp conflict.
Who do you think won?
Well, they've divided the land in half. Half of it is a memorial plaza and half of it is for commercial space. So I think they found a solution that, you know, they tried to find a solution that gave even, you know, even amount of space to both of these sides. But it took a long time to come to that solution. And I think for a lot of people, they see a tilt toward the commercial. And we'll have to see what happens over the next, you know, 5 to 10 years.
I want to get into some of the players after the break. We'll bring you back after the break, of course, and talk more about this and some of the ideas that were put out there. At the beginning, there was a plan to build 450-story towers, right, to replace the Twin Towers?
Yes, that was the very first proposal put forward.
And that obviously did not happen.
Right. I mean, there have been so many plans that have come and gone, and that's one of the fascinating aspects of this project.
Well, we'll get into that after the break. Elizabeth Greenspan's new book is Battle for Ground Zero, Inside the Political Struggle to Rebuild the World Trade Center. Elizabeth, stand by. We'll have more after a break.
Funding for Here and Now comes from GEICO, protecting drivers and their families with insurance coverage for over 75 years. More at geico.com or 1-800-947-AUTO.
It's Here and Now, and on this 12th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, we're talking with Elizabeth Greenspan. Her new book is called Battle for Ground Zero, Inside the Political Struggle to Rebuild the World Trade Center. And Elizabeth, let's talk about that political struggle. There are a lot of players involved here. Of course, Mayor Rudy Giuliani, who was mayor of New York at the time of the attacks, Governor George Pataki, and of course, the current mayor, Michael Bloomberg. How did they weigh in on this?
Giuliani had a few months left before he left office, and so he gave a speech in December. And what he said was really interesting because he called for the importance of a memorial at the site and was one of the few to caution against large-scale economic development downtown. And this really went against the talking points at the time, which was the importance of rebuilding all of the commercial space that was destroyed. Governor Pataki felt strongly about rebuilding all of this space, but he also wanted to build a symbol on the skyline. And this is he named the building Freedom Tower soon after it was conceived by Daniel Libeskind. So he saw the need for both a symbol and office space. And Mayor Bloomberg also believed in the importance of rebuilding all of the commercial space lost. So that was ultimately the push to rebuild came from those two.
Why isn't the building called the Freedom Tower?
For a long time, it was. And it struggled for a long time as well to find tenants to fill the building. And then in 2008, not long after the economic crash, a new director came into the Port Authority named Chris Ward. And he decided that the building needed some help and that it was too weighed down with symbolism. He thought that there was this monumentalist push downtown and that that was really getting in the way of finding tenants and moving forward on construction. And so he issued a document that said they were changing the name from Freedom Tower to its address, One World Trade Center. And from then on, it's been officially known as One World Trade Center. Primarily, what the Port Authority says was to better market the building.
And of course, there have been big questions about who in the world would want to work in this tower, which of course, could be the target of terrorists in the future. You write that the New York Police Department even raised these concerns, saying, due to the history of Al-Qaeda strikes at this location and the symbolic nature of the Freedom Tower itself, it seems clear that this building will become the prime terrorist target in New York City as soon as it is occupied. How did those fears get dispersed?
Well, they had to redesign the building, actually, in 2005 because of these fears. The initial designs had security features, of course, but not quite enough. And the NYPD called for a redesign to further fortify the building. So now when you look at the building, the first 20 stories are actually made out of concrete and then covered with this reflective material to hide that concrete. And they have the most up-to-date security measures, you know, that they possibly can. I think the side of the building that faces the street has blast-resistant plastic rather than glass to protect against a car bomb. There are all kinds of measures in the stairwells and the elevators. So they've really outfitted this like no other office building in the country. And, the businesses moving in, that was enough for them to feel safe and to move their employees down into the building when it opens.
Will there be tenants?
Yes. Right now, all number of the buildings are securing tenants. But in One World Trade Center, the most notable tenant is Condé Nast, which will be moving its offices from Times Square down into the building. And Condé Nast is a publisher of magazines like The New Yorker and Vogue. And so when the Port Authority secured Condé, this was a huge coup. And it really shifted the tone downtown and the sense of optimism for the success of this site.
You spoke to a lot of family members of people who died on 9/11, when the Twin Towers collapsed. How have they reacted to what exists there today?
The feelings are mixed. I've spoken to some families who are very happy with the memorial. They're pleased that so much land, 8 acres, was devoted to a memorial plaza. And they like the fact that the names surround the pools at ground level so that everyone can see them. But there are other families who always wanted artifacts from the site, pieces of wreckage, to stand on the plaza as well. Right now, those artifacts will be in the museum, which will be underground. But there's nothing at plaza level. And for many families, they felt like there needed to be more that remembered the day itself and the attacks, not just the Twin Towers. And so they're still upset, and they're calling for certain artifacts like the globe sphere to be returned to the plaza.
And there was, of course, a big uproar over the Islamic center that is planned. They called it the Ground Zero Mosque, even though it is, as it has been pointed out, not a mosque nor on the site of Ground Zero. But what's happened with that center?
So the Islamic Center has gone forward. It's open. There is a prayer space today. It's still under construction, though. The plans were very ambitious to create a kind of community center and a prayer space 2 blocks from Ground Zero. And so that aspect is still under construction, but part of the building remains open and is very widely used.
Elizabeth, I lived in New York for years and after the attacks, and even for a time commuted through Ground Zero on a daily basis because, as you know, the PATH train that comes in from New Jersey takes you right into the hole in the ground, what was a hole in the ground. And it felt like there was a hole in lower Manhattan, that there was something about that area that was very eerie for years afterwards. Do you think that that problem has been fixed, that that hole in lower Manhattan is not there anymore?
I do. I think the rebuilding of the site is really important. We are still in the process of executing the decisions that have been made, but it will be done. And there's a memorial people can visit. There is a tower that you can see from almost any vantage point in lower Manhattan. And I think that's really important to people, to have a space that's filled, and that even if you can't easily get access, you know, there's a lot of construction going on around it, and there's security to get to the memorial. It's there, and you can visit the plaza, and you can stand on it, and that's meaningful.
You were there this morning.
Yes, I was downtown. The ceremony was unfolding on the plaza, and it was closed to everyone but victims' families. But I walked around the streets, and a lot of people were congregating in the squares and parks right around the site and listening to the names being read and taking pictures. And so, you know, people turned out. There was a nice feeling downtown.
Now, you live in Boston, and your book ends with the marathon bombings that happened in Boston in April. There is talk of a permanent memorial here. Could Boston learn anything from what happened in New York with the site at Ground Zero?
Yes, absolutely. I think everyone should be prepared for it to take longer than they expect. This will not be a fast process. And people should also be prepared to really have everyone participate and to allow everyone to raise their concerns, voice their demands, and to have it be a little bit messy and contested. I think a desire to make things move forward quickly and swiftly and neatly to some degree can only prolong the process. So if we can have a thorough public debate, we'll get ideas on the table, and then we can move forward. But it's going to take some time, and I think if people can be ready for that and embrace that, then we can have a fulfilling process.
Elizabeth Greenspan's new book is Battle for Ground Zero, Inside the Political Struggle to Rebuild the World Trade Center. Elizabeth, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Funding for Here and Now comes from Constant Contact, offering small businesses online tools like social media, event, and email marketing from one login at constantcontact.com. And Gentle Giant Moving Company, coordinating moves in neighborhoods across the country with locations nationwide. More at gentlegiant.com.